I broke my back.
What do you mean by that? Your
back is broken. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children.
He will be mine in round nine. And if he makes me sore, I'll cut it to four.
Thank you very much.
And if that don't do, we'll get him in two. If he run, we'll get him in one.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the V2 Boxing Podcast. Joining me tonight to start things off is Chris. Good evening, pal. How are you? You all right?
Evening, Paul. I'm not bad, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate.
Over the shock of your Star Striker being sold now, inevitably, after what you've done?
Well, we're not going to talk about biting or anything like that. Although I have been tempted to roll back the years and watch the Tyson-Holyfield fight. Yeah, bit of a shocker, that one, I'll be honest. Obviously, we didn't do a show last week, and I'll be honest, I haven't seen any of the action from the last couple of weeks. So I'm relying solely on you tonight, mate. Let's have a look back a fortnight ago. There you got Provodnikov against Algeria, and it was a big upset. Algeria getting a split decision, I think it was. Did Algeria deserve the win, first of all?
Yep, I thought so. Very close, but I thought he edged it by a point or so. After the first round, obviously, he had a nightmare of a first round, which was always going to be a danger. But after the first round, like I thought he would, I thought he boxed well. I was surprised, actually, at how well he contained Provodnikov. He made Provodnikov look pretty toothless for long periods, pretty one-dimensional. You know, the body shots and the counters and the movement all worked with T. He got his game plan absolutely spot on after that first round. Had it not been for the fact that he had that terrible eye injury, I think he'd have probably pulled away and won the fight clearly, because he had the wood on Provodnikov from a style point of view. So I thought it was a great fight. Very, very pleased for Algeria, because he seems like a good guy. You know, I'm trying to claim some kind of bragging rights. Even though I said that Provodnikov would win, I didn't see Algeria as being the massive underdog as others did. And I said he would give Provodnikov a great fight before losing a close decision. So, you know, I was... you know, halfway there, I suppose, saying that it wasn't a complete mismatch, but great fight, really enjoyed it, and the right man got his hand raised at the end, I thought.
Yeah, because it was a pretty nasty injury, wasn't it? I saw the pictures the next morning. And,
to be honest, I thought he was going to have to get pulled out, because that was, was that the second or the first knockdown? I think it was the first one, and incredible how quickly his eye flared up. You could tell straight away as he got up from the knockdown, he was taking a mandatory eight, he was sort of pouring away at the eye, and you could tell it was bothering him. You know, survived a couple of stern examinations from the doctor, and, you know, it was touch and go for a bit, but that's what it's all about at that high level. That's why it's so exciting, and, just an excellent fight, and, it's good. You know, obviously, I know Provodnikov's earned a lot of fans, and there's going to be a lot of people disappointed for him, because, you know, he's been chasing that big payday against someone like Pacquiao or Garcia, and now, you know, he ain't going to get that, it's not looking like. So I can see why people are upset and so on, but... you know, upsets like this are good for the sport. You know, I thought it was excellent. Really enjoyed it,
yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree that upsets are good for the sport. They keep it fresh as well at the end of the day, don't they? You know, it's if it's the same guys winning all the time, then sometimes it just get a bit boring. I mean, people are tuning in to watch Mayweather lose.
Yeah,
they probably tune, and they, you know, more would tune in, I think, to see how he bounces back from a defeat. But yeah, it certainly was an interesting fight. I mean, let's bring it forward to this weekend, because my memory's not good enough to reel off all the fights from that weekend off the top of my head. Lomachenko makes history, and you've done the write-up for this one. Again, I haven't seen the fight, but from what I gather, he was a clear winner again.
Yeah, I had it 10 rounds to 2. Jamper's card, is it Liz Jamper or Lisa Jamper? I forget first name. So, I mean, she scored the fight 114, you know, 6 rounds apiece. Don't know what she was watching. Russell was never in the fight. I think I said I believe that his lack of really sort of, you know, he hasn't even fought any guys you'd really consider sort of gatekeepers or, you know, near the top of the division before stepping in there with Lomachenko. He's been moved so slowly, and it's come back to haunt him now, because, you know, one intrigue I had going into the fight was, how does Russell cope when he's having to box on the back foot? mm-hmm. which he's not really had to do much in his career so far. Lomachenko stuck him on the back for most of the fight, and the answer is that, you know, Russell just doesn't look that hot if he's not boxing going forward, and if he can't dictate the pace of fight,
apologies.
He's quick, so he's quick. He's a good natural athlete, but you know, I was a bit disappointed with him. I think he's been exposed a little bit, I have to say. But credit to Lomachenko. It's difficult to judge just how good he is because he's fighting in such unusual context. You know, I mean, any other 3-5 professional would be saying how sensational he looks, but because it's him and the expectation, you know, we're still looking at his performances and thinking, well, you know, he wasn't so great in this area, he wasn't so great there. But you know, he'll be the finished article soon enough, I think. Already you can see the improvements in terms of his inside fighting and defending on the inside, the improvements he made from the Salido fight. He wasn't pushed back, he never allowed the other guy to push him back, and when he got inside, he outworked his man. He looked very good. I mean, there's still things he can work on. I still don't think he's quite sure what kind of fighter he wants to be as a professional. Does he want to be, you know, a pressure fighter? Does he want to be a boxer puncher? Does he want to be a back foot boxer going away? But that'll come with time and experience. Like I say, he's under a particularly strong microscope just because of who he is and his amateur achievements, and because he's taken so many chances with his matchmaking. Mm-hmm. So impressed with Lomachenko, but very, very disappointed with Russell. You know, really thought we'd see a bit more from him when he did step up. Judging on that performance, all he's got is a quick pair of hands. But you know, he's young enough to prove me wrong anyway. I was really expecting more from him.
Mm-hmm. I do want to just go back to the other weekend, because I did forget, you know, that the other fight that we'll discuss it more when Damien joins the corner a little bit. okay. Brian Rose, Demetrius Andrade, obviously. Again, I haven't seen it, but you know, the reactions are so widespread. I think we get a third voice in, and Cal, I know you're listening, mate, so if you want to chuck us your thoughts on the Rose fight. I also want to mention Glenn Tapia, obviously. Some of our listeners might know him from the guy who took a brutal beating from Kirkland. He's come back from that with 2 first round stoppages, so you know, fair play to the kid. He's got back in the ring, and he's winning all right. The level of opponent isn't the best, but you know, after the beating he took, it's got to be taken with baby steps, unfortunately for him. And I'm sure he's not happy about it, but for the sake of his health, I think that's the best way to go about it. So let's run through the other fights. Chad Dawson was on the card this weekend, not looking his usual chiselled self, shall we say.
I didn't bother making the right weight limit. He was meant to weigh in on the scales at 179, I think. He came in at 183. And allegedly had blown up to 202 overnight. And certainly on the scales and in the ring, he looked, you know, pretty soft and out of condition. I don't think he's... By the looks of him, he's barely spent a day in the gym in the last 12 months since he got blasted out by Stevenson. Yeah. Not that it mattered in this case, as a guy he came to fight. I mean, Blades, I mean, okay, he was overmatched, but everything about this guy just screamed, I'm here to get knocked out in the first round. You know, 2 knee braces on, again, soft around the middle, didn't look like a natural light heavy in there at all, looked like a blown up middleweight. You know, even at out of shape, untrained Dawson is always going to be too good for that. It's actually, I was surprised looking back at Dawson's record. It's the first time in nearly 7 years he stopped anyone. I know he's a stylist, first and foremost, for a puncher, but maybe it was just picked with that in mind. You know, he needs to get someone out of there, and he did. But I would, you know, I'm pretty worried about Dawson in the long term. Going forward, I'm worried that he'll never really get back to that old level he was at, because I don't know how you feel about Dawson, but I've always had misgivings over his mindset, his mental, you know, his mental capacities.
He always comes across as a guy who you think can be broken mentally. I mean, I think if he fought somebody like Hopkins and Hopkins turned on the talk, I think if he fought somebody who was quite vicious and aggressive, is what I want to say, then I think he'd lose the fight before he got in the ring. Mm. Somebody with a trainer like Angel Garcia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Somebody who gets under your skin. I don't remember Hopkins trying that with him when they fought. I might be wrong, but I can't remember. And I just think if Hopkins had tried it, potentially.
To be honest, I try and forget everything to do with those 2 fights. They were pretty... the second one, the one that went 12 rounds, was a bit dour, wasn't it? But, no, I don't remember Hopkins trying to give it the... you know, trying to play the mind games that he usually does with someone. I know Stevenson, you know, gave him a lot of stick. Well, Steven gives everyone stick, but Stevenson gave him a lot of stick last year before their fight, and obviously that was a, you know, stunning result, which not many people saw coming, the first round knockout. But, you know, as well as that with Dawson, I've always just got the impression that, you know, when the chips are really down and things are really getting hard, I don't think his heart's in it enough. You know, we've seen it a few times in the past, and, you know, being out of the ring for a year, you know, back-to-back defeats from Ward, you know, which was a sustained beatdown, and then getting taken out of there by Stevenson in one round, and then being out of the ring for 12 months, and obviously not spent that 12 months putting in the hard hours in the gym. You know, it doesn't look good coming in. You know, I mean, couldn't even make an inflated weight, catch weight, you know, 179. Yeah. You know, it looked like he'd made no effort to come in. So, to me, he looks like a fighter low on confidence with his heart not really in the sport anymore. So, you know, he's talking about coming back and fighting for the title again, but I think Stevenson will knock him out again. And I think, you know, I think Kovalev would certainly beat him as well. So, either he waits till one of them goes up to Cruiser or whatnot, or jags it in. But right now, I don't see him getting back in the title picture anytime soon.
No, I completely agree with you. Right, the couple of other things I want to run through then before we come on to the fight of the night from Saturday. You said it stole the show when I was reading your write-up before, after I put it on the site, v2boxing.com. Dave Caldwell had a show on Saturday night, and I was hoping to go across to it. It was only in Manchester, unfortunately. I couldn't attend due to spending 4 hours having some guy scar my arm on Saturday morning. But
some guy did what, 4 hours?
I had a tattoo done.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, you can't word these things like that with me. I just don't get it, mate. So you've got to be more direct, you know what I'm like.
I didn't want to go and sit ringside in quite close quarters when I've just had that done for 4 hours. It didn't really appeal, if I'm honest. So the results, Liam Hanrahan, who's a very exciting prospect, was on the card, and he stopped Isaac Ozo in 2 rounds. Liam Conroy lost to Max Maxwell. Points decision over 6. That's a surprise. Peter Spencer knocked out Paul Haynes in 2. James Higgy lost to Dan Blackwell on points. Nathan Smith beat Mick Wills on points. Steve Williams beat Avriz Trisno on points. Nadeem Siddique beat Alexander Farkas via technical knockout in the first. Andy Kramer beat Matt Seawright, Matt Seawright retired after the second. Chris Conwell beat Yusuf Alhamidi on points after 4. Tommy McCarthy beat Imantas Davidis and by a second round stoppage. Rob Huff lost to Darren McKenna. I mean, it's always good about the good thing about the Caldwell shows. I know you've been to one. Is they match their fighters tough. You know, they're not blowouts that you. For example, they're not Anthony Joshua at Wembley.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really good to see these small hall shows are fantastic. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we say this every time we talk about Dave Caldwell, but if anyone out there likes small to medium hall shows, and you love sort of, you know, get yourself to a Dave Caldwell show. He puts on a show, good fights, and he's a good bloke as well.
He is really top bloke. Good evening, Damien. For all our listeners, heard and jump in there. Better late than never. While we're on the subject of small hall shows, then you went to the Waterfront Brawl in Belfast. Good night.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was sort of, you know, it wasn't really the most competitive bills. You know, I think the main event was pretty good. I included you on a link on Facebook. It showed it there. Yeah, I think iceboxingwebsite.com have a video of it, but it was what they expect, you know, and the sort of Conrad Cummings and a couple of other boys that were on the undercard, they were fighting sort of journeymen. But, you know, I have to give a credit, the journeymen that turned up, like they really did turn up, they earned their paycheck. You know, there was some competitive fights on it, and the McGuigan's fighters were made to win a bit. But the main event, Mark McCulloch was, I think all his supporters sort of had their hearts in their mouths. You know, at one point, it really didn't look like he was going to get knocked out in the fourth round. He gets caught in the temple, and there was sort of about a 4-second delay, and his legs just turned to rubber. And I said to the guy, I think it's Nathan Orr. He's on Twitter. Yeah. He was beside me, and I was sort of saying to him, like, I'll be surprised if he makes it out of this round. And he sort of came back, and he ended up sort of blabbering the fella. But I think it was the fifth round. McCullough got his nose broke as well, so it just seemed to be going from bad to worse. But he sort of dug in, and he showed sort of grit, you know. But I think he made that fight look, you know, far harder than he should have, really.
Yeah, and Nathan's a really top guy. Some of the stuff he writes is fantastic.
Yeah,
the Conrad Cummins knockout, I saw it today. Conrad put it on his Facebook page. It was a hell of a punch, and as you say, it was a delayed reaction, but it was one of those punches you don't really get up from. Chris, I want to go back to your write-up then, mate, while we're sort of on the subject. Robert Guerrero, you said he stole the show. So talk us through the fight, mate.
It was many of the rounds were just the same after each other. It was just relentless in close phone booth brawl. Just great action. Very often one guy was pushed to the ropes, fighting off the ropes. Neither of them could block it up all the way through. But Guerrero always had the upper hand for me. Early on he was sharp, but he's busy with his jab and the 1-2s, mixing his shots a little bit better. When the fight got in close, Kamega had his moments. He had plenty of them, in fact. Obviously, he completely shut Guerrero's left eye. But, Guerrero just had that extra little bit of class when it mattered, particularly with his left hooks to the body. I thought some of his combinations switching between head and body were great. Considering he's been out of the ring for 13 months, to fight at that pace for 12 rounds, taking a lot of big shots as he did is pretty impressive, obviously. His conditioning's off the charts, as is Kamega's, to be fair. Certainly one of the best fights I've seen this year. Certainly stole the show on Saturday night for me. I know me and Toppy had this discussion on the forum today, and he was saying, I like my boxing matches a little bit more technical than that, and a bit more highbrow. But for pure entertainment and blood and guts, it was fantastic. And when right up until the last bell, neither of them were wilting at the end. But Guerrero looked really good, Like I say, even though it was a sort of rough, tough inside kind of fight, a lot of rough and tumble and a lot of punishment being dished out, he did show some little bits of class, used his jab well in the 1-2s. Obviously, like I say, the left hook to the body he used brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
And showed some decent footwork as well. It's probably an underrated part of his game, stepping around some of Kamega's attacks and making angles for himself. I had it 8-4 in rounds to Guerrero. I can't remember the exact scores the judges had, but they were along the same kind of lines. Damien, did you see the fight?
Yeah, I've seen it, but I was sort of half watching it. I probably wouldn't be the best person to ask for a proper opinion on it, but it just seemed like Guerrero was getting hit a bit too much. I have all three fights here on the computer, and I watched the Alexander and Soto Karas, and then I watched the Lomachenko and Gary Russell Jr., and then I had to go out. I didn't get to watch Guerrero, but whenever I come back in, I was sort of half watching it, and then I had to go out again. But for me, after watching Lomachenko and Gary Russell Jr., after watching that sort of class, because it was pure chess match between them two, I just couldn't really get interested in the Guerrero fight for me. It just didn't get the juices going. I just thought, the two of them were, I thought Guerrero was getting hit too much, and I just thought he looked very slow, and I don't know. I think it was probably because I was sort of blown away by the Lomachenko fight, and then I watched Guerrero. I don't know, maybe I'm with Toppy on this one.
Can you remember the fight, mate? Were you drinking?
Sorry, certainly I would say, Guerrero, did get hit a lot. But again, I wouldn't say it's anything new for him, and I don't think he's ever been the quickest anyway, so I think it was kind of, Not your typical Guerrero fight, because he doesn't do that every time, but I don't think there's anything to be too alarmed about if you're a big Guerrero fan. I think that, the fight kind of showed what his level is. Yeah. And we saw his level against Mayweather. He got outclassed against, a really, really elite level fighter.
To be honest, I think what it was as well, because I didn't look at the results when I woke up, and then I went to watch the fight, and when I watched the first two fights, the Alexander and the Lomachenko, I sort of had a quick peek on Twitter, and I'd seen someone's tweet saying this was my fight of the year, and I think I was expecting a bit too much, maybe.
I wouldn't quite say fight of the year, but very good fight, one of the best.
I'll need to go and watch it again just to
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm gonna feel daft if you don't change your mind. So, yeah, please do. Yeah.
Damien, I want to go back to the Andrade and Rose fight. We didn't discuss it earlier because obviously you went on the call. There were some comments on our forum that Rose disgraced himself. He was, you know, it was disgusting performance. We're not going to name any names, but the guy's a complete jackass. We made them.
Yeah, no, I've seen some of the comments, but I didn't
even
want to get into all that.
Yeah, I mean, was it just a case of Rose, you know, turning up, feeling the power early on, maybe realizing Andre was just too quick for him, and not wanting to get completely outclassed and stopped early?
I think it was 100%. I just say, well, for me, Andrade's underrated. You know, I thought from the start that he has been a bit underrated, and going to that fight, I just think from the opening bell, Andrade just stopped him from even doing what he wanted to do. You know, it wasn't a case of Rose not wanting to throw punches. It just, he couldn't get them off. You know, Andrade just had the speed, the footwork, the angles on him, and you know, I think he had hit a brick wall, and it was just nothing he could have done. You know, he was in there against someone who was levels above him, and it was just a case that he, you know, just wasn't able to do the job. It's, you know, I think everyone knew going in anyway, you know, Brian Rose's level, and nobody expected him to win, but you know, I think for people to come out and sort of say that kind of stuff about him, you know, I'd like to see Evans in the ring against Andrade. You know, let's see if they would throw punches at him, but, you know, I think from he was put down in the first round, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he was just up against it, and he knew it, and every time he threw a punch, he was getting countered, you know, too fast, the hand speed was there, and there was just nothing he could have done. Mm-hmm. For me, anyway, personally, I just think he just got completely outclassed. It wasn't the case of, you know, if he really didn't want to do the job, he wouldn't have lasted, you know, as long as he did. You know, he would have went out quicker, but, you know, he did show guts. He stayed there. I think was it seventh round? Because it's when I lost it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have been over in about maybe three or four rounds if he really didn't have the heart to stay in the ring. Mm-hmm. But he did. He tried. And I think that in the end, he just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, Callum just said that Andrade was just a level above him. And and that was it, you know.
Sure, yeah. Strictly speaking, when Rose watches it back, if he does, he'll probably look back and think, I could have done this better. I don't think he gave his absolute best, but no one's at their absolute best for any fight in your career anyway, for every fight. And I'm much more inclined to agree with what Damien said. Sometimes the other guy's just too good for you.
It must be disheartening, but as well, you know, just when you're in the ring and someone's just able to catch you so cleanly, so quick.
Yeah, and, you know, with regards to you know, Rose's low punch output, which a lot of people have equated with him, you know, basically bottling it and not wanting to fight and not showing up. What I've got to say about that is, you know, he's not a big output puncher at the best of times anyway. And when you're getting countered every time, you're going to throw less. I mean, like I say, you look at guys like Pacquiao and Calzaghe, you know, great volume punches, mm-hmm. high output. But look how fewer punches Pacquiao throws when he fights Marquez.
Yeah.
That's just because he's getting countered, so he has to throw less. It makes him more cautious. Even Calzaghe against Hopkins, he threw a lot less than normal. You know, down from about 1,100 punches down to about 700. And that's simply because you're getting countered. So when a guy's quicker than you and he's hitting you every time you open up, you know, you're going to throw less just trying to survive. So, I thought a couple of the comments about Rose on our forum were, a little bit out of order. I thought a bit distasteful. Sure, you probably look back and think you could have done better, but I think most people look back on, you know, the majority of fights, there's always things you can do and change. But no matter what, Brian Rose turned up, and Jordy was the only guy that was going to win.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's sort of even if you look at sort of just to throw up the Lomachenko fight again, you know, Brian Rose had never been in against a fighter like that either, as Gary Russell Jr. had never done, you know, so it was sort of people are quick to say, oh, you know, Gary Russell, if only he had have had better fights going into the fight against Lomachenko, but you can just use the same for Brian Rose. I'm sure Gary Russell Jr. is probably saying he could have fought better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting that the Boxrec description of the fight is Rose gave a good account of himself but was taking brutal power shot combinations from Andre to the head and body along the ropes, and in the seventh round when referee Michael Griffin stopped it as Andrade was closing the show. The bout could have been stopped in the previous round, but the referee gave Rose another chance, and Rose got hit all night with his gloves up in a defensive position. It wasn't a close bout. I think that pretty much sums up everything I've read and heard about the fight and what you guys have said there as well. Mm. Right, well, there's obviously more than more happened than just those couple of fights in the last 2 weeks. But we don't have time to cover them all, to be honest. And as I haven't seen any of them, I feel a bit useless. I want to ask about white collar boxing and semi professional boxing, and you guys all know the reason I'm asking is obviously. Yeah. Our thoughts go to the family of Lance Ferguson Prayog, who sadly passed away after a semi-professional contest in Nottingham. Apparently he had an illness and he collapsed after the fight, but they're not saying it was definitely to do with the fight, from what I understand. It wasn't white-collar like was originally being reported. So should there be such a thing as semi-professional boxing, or should it strictly be amateurs and professionals?
That's a difficult question. Hence the reason that the debate's been going on for decades, and it'll be going on for decades more. The older I get, and you know, the more I look at things, the more I do think it should just be a straight up amateur or professional. I don't think there's any room for middle ground, and certainly I think if you start trying to box on different levels, you're taking a chance with people's health a little bit more if it's not regulated properly, not officiated properly. So, no, my gut instinct is that, yeah, I'd rather see it just, you know, properly organised, governed amateur boxing, and then the professionals with no middle ground. But, I can see both sides of the argument. I really, I feel bad sitting on the fence, but I really couldn't give a definite opinion on it either way. I don't know. What do you reckon, Damien?
Well, to be honest, I just think if anyone was going to set up, a card, it should be there should be a full inspection. There should be officials there. All the fighters should have the same medical sort of checks that, say, an amateur fighter has. Yeah. Although the promoter should have the money to put that up. If he doesn't, then the card shouldn't go ahead. It should be for the fighter's safety too. It shouldn't be a case of just going around the local gyms and saying, can you come and fight in this card? And, I know a guy who's just had his 200th white collar fight. He's on my Facebook, and, I can't remember last time he's even won a fight. You know what I mean? But that, for me, that can't be good. You know what I mean? If you're just going to take beatings. And I think some of these guys, the promoters, just like others, some other promoters are just interested in getting the crowd and making a quick buck, Just think, if you're going to have a card, it needs to be set up correctly. They have to pay the correct doctors to carry out the proper checks, have the correct paramedics ringside, have everything the same as what any other boxing card would have, and if they don't want to put up the money for it, then they shouldn't be allowed to sell tickets or have fights on the card.
I mean, the white collar stuff, interestingly, Callum says there's no need, but a lot of the white collar shows are done for charity.
Yeah.
There's a lot done around my area, which is heavily advertised on Facebook and the local press. And it's all for charity, and the guys involved in it normally own a gym. So what they say is, the last one I saw was about £50 to enter for four fight round robin tournament, and they trained you for a month beforehand. So you're not going in if you haven't got a clue what you're doing. So that type of thing I can understand. But from what I gather, what I've read on the internet, this isn't white collar boxing as it is today. I think white collar boxing is quite a broad spectrum. This is semi professional. This is like the amateurs without the skill levels, I guess.
People even just saying there about charity events, like the ones that I've been to. There was one I went to last year over here. It was for sort of a kids' charity. And just to put it in perspective, there was one of my mates were fighting on the card, and he was fighting this other guy from another gym. Now, the other guy he was fighting started, unloading proper heavy shots, and at one point the referee stopped the guy and put him back, and we could hear clearly from the side of the ring, and he was like, will you calm down? This is just for charity.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it shouldn't be, at a charity event, it's not... The two guys shouldn't be going at it, trying to knock each other out. It should just be a bit of fun, sort of go late, go easy on each other, just for people to keep entertained. But, I think in that perspective of charity things, it should be treated as a fun event, not for two guys going out trying to hurt each other properly,
Yeah, there's always that kind of person, isn't there? I mean, look at Jabby on R4. I mean, spar with Calbrook.
Jabby, listen to our podcast.
Probably.
Do we know that?
It's all right. I'll have my
staff. Good words everywhere.
My staff privileges will be removed first thing in the morning. Don't worry.
Yeah, good bully.
He's a jackass, though.
No comment.
Jabby knows I like him, really. Yeah, so I mean, obviously it's a sad time when any you know guy involved in boxing, I suppose, at any level passes away. Obviously, you know, that really sad that this is happening. He leaves behind a young daughter and a girlfriend, and as I said, we pass the you know the wishes on to his family. there's another. Another card on Friday night from Glasgow. Ricky Burns is fighting Dejan Slaty Cannon. I think I've pronounced that right. If I haven't, I'm pretty close. He's 18-0 with 13 knockouts. And Tony Sims says this fight's tougher than people are thinking. Damien, do you think we're going to see a new Ricky Burns under the new trainer, or is it just going to be back to basics for him?
I don't. To be honest, sort of given up a bit of hope on Ricky Burns now. You know, for all the talent he has, something's just went missing, you know, in the last couple of years from him. And, you know, I think before every fight he's had, his last three fights, I think they're just printing out the same, you know, the same quotes from him. You know, this you're going to see a new Ricky Burns, you know, we've heard it all before, but, you know, I'll just hold out is it Friday,
Yeah,
I'll just hold out the Friday and see, because, you know, I think after last time, you know, he said the same thing, the jaws mended, you're going to see the best Ricky Burns, and, you know, it was far from the best Ricky Burns, albeit that he was fighting, you know, probably the best fighter he's ever faced, but, you know, it's been a couple of years now since we've seen a decent Ricky Burns, so, you know, we'll just have to wait and see for me, but, you know, I haven't seen the guy he's fighting, you know, I've yet to see any of his fights, I've quick looked at his record, and, you know, it looks okay, because I can't remember who it was he fought. Don't think he fought anybody sort of that you would know, but a lot of people on it had, you know, I think there's a couple of decent records on there, but, you know, as I said, it's just one of them things with Ricky Burns. His last three fights, he's looked like he's really been downhill. And, you know, he hasn't got the power there for a start. He's been getting hit far too often, too easy in his last three fights, and unless Tony Sims can work an absolute miracle on him, you know, I think this could be a fight where, you know, it'd be a smart move to have money on, you know, this owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the guys he's fought with probably decent records are Bahom Payazov and Petrov.
Yeah,
33-3-2 and 21-0. Sorry, 20-1-0. Interestingly, Chris, this is the first time he will have fought out of Montenegro or Serbia, or that region, at the very least. Is there a concern of how this guy will travel? Because we've seen fighters fight predominantly at home for most of their careers, and then as soon as they step foot, you know, foot into another country, they lose it.
Well, I think when you're taking anyone with a record deal out of the mainstream eye, you know, you take the chance for them, regardless of whether it's, you know, the atmosphere getting to him or just the fact that he's going to get exposed because Burns is the first, you know, really top-class fighter he's fought. But, Damien's kind of winning me over what he's saying there. You know, I can just sort of, I've got to admit, I've not seen the guy fight, but with Burns, you just almost get the impression that he's kind of plateaued a little bit. And I don't think he's going to lose on Friday, but I can almost imagine a really sort of a win, but a really flat points win. You know, where he just doesn't look good and takes a few shots, maybe gets wobbled once or twice, and then, like Damien said, they're getting fed the same lines afterwards about where, you know, we're coming back and you're going to see a better Ricky Burns next time. But I would love to see Ricky Burns work his way back into the bigger picture at lightweight. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and he's considering the gifts that he's got or what he's not got, really, you'd have to say he has carved out a really, really good career. One that no one would have expected 5-6 years back when he was losing at, you know, sort of low European level. So, you know, if he can't get back there, then, you know, no need to, you know, no cause for shame, just like there's no cause for shame in getting shut out against Crawford. But, I do fear that we've probably seen the best of him now. So, hopefully he can prove me wrong.
Yeah, it's just the ad as well. You know, just talking about those last three fights. You know, even sort of though, you know, I mentioned the lack of power, and Burns has said, you know, even though, you know, his knockout percentage is, you know, really low, there was even something sort of in the Mitchell fight and before that that, you know, made fighters stay away from him, you know, even his jab. But it seemed to be ever since he's moved to Matchroom and Gonzalez, that, you know, the last three fights, the fighters have just been able to walk through it. You know, something's just went. You know, there's always seemed to be something that kept fighters off him. But I don't know, for some reason it just looks like people just really don't respect his power. You know, is that the last three fights, and they're not afraid just to walk in. You know, Beltran, Gonzalez hadn't fought out of Puerto Rico either. Yeah. You know, he travelled well. Nobody expected that. And, you know, he came over and he was practically winning a shutout until he sort of quit for some reason.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Yeah, speaking of Matchroom, I remember Hearn saying after the Beltran farce, saying that he was a bit concerned about Burns' weight and thought it was maybe time to go to 10 stone. Personally, I don't really see any mileage in that. I think that was just, you know, Hearn trying to look at, you know, explain away a poor performance and a shoddy, you know, and a lucky draw. You know, Burns is a pretty big lightweight, but you know, the way he's looked lately, can you imagine him not being able to keep guys off him and going in there with someone like Matisse, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, not that he'd be in there with that kind of level, but you know what I'm getting at. I think he's got to be lightweight or nothing.
Yeah.
On the undercard, Stephen Simmons and Wadi Camacho face off. This fight is going to be a cracker. There is some very, very, very bad blood between these two guys. I think Wadi Camacho said some stuff about Stephen Simmons' wife.
He's posting pictures, sort of Photoshop pictures of her and stuff. Was and he? In bed.
Because they got married in the build up to the fight. Stephen Simmons. I watched the press conference today, and interestingly, they passed it straight over to Camacho and Simmons. Normally, they'd go Ricky Burns and then do the undercard. When Camacho was talking, Simmons went and sat right in front of him. Got in front and sat with his back to the press. And Camacho wouldn't look at him. You know, the shades came down and he kept looking away. And then when Simmons started talking, the headphones went on. To me, Camacho looks as if he's bottling this fight.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Simmons is going to stop him.
Yeah, no, I thought that from the start anyway. I don't see anything.
I think Camacho's going to get stopped early. I don't think he wants any part of Stephen Simmons.
I don't know where Camacho's got this newfound glory of, you know, thinking that he is something that, you know, that he's not. You know, he's been beat by worst fighter Tony Conquest, and I think Stephen Simmons is, you know, a cut above them.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, Camacho seems to have his, you know, self-made aura around himself, and maybe it's just to wind up Stephen Simmons because he knows that he's got his hands full, but. You know, I just think it's stupid.
Mm-hmm. Well, Simmons has faced, you know, you'd argue his last two opponents are probably better or on a par with Camacho, Sweeney and Graf. And, you know, in nine fights, he's won a more meaningful title than Camacho has won in his entire career. I mean, there's not really a lot we can say about it because neither have had fantastic careers, but what about a prediction for it? Do you think he's going to see halfway?
My initial thought on the fight was that Simmons would win by decision, so I'm just going to stick with that, just because that was my gut feeling at the start. You know, I try and after the whole, you know, Frog Groves thing, where everyone was becoming an expert in, you know, body language and psychology and stuff, I'm trying to not think too hard about who's got the mental edge on who and who's got the wood on them in that sense. So I'm going to stick with my original prediction and say Simmons wins it on points.
I would say it may go over the sixth round. You know, say that there may be a late stoppage, but I would probably go with Chris and say it'll probably go to points. But I'd say that I don't think Camacho is going to get knocked out early.
I'm going to go for an early stoppage, probably about the fourth round. I haven't thought it in the entire build up, and then just the way he was at the press conference.
We had it.
So, no, I've watched it. iFilm London have put it on Facebook.
Oh, right.
I couldn't get up to Glasgow, unfortunately.
It's just
the way he was. He didn't look like a guy who had any confidence in what he was going to do. Also on the undercard, Curtis Woodhouse is back from retirement. I'm going to face Willie Lemond for the Commonwealth and British titles. Do you think Curtis reached the peak in his last fight when he beat Darren Hamilton? Do you think he can beat Limond as well? Because Willie Limond knows this is last chance saloon for him.
I think it, you would have to. I couldn't really pick Willie Limond to win this fight. You know, it's just the age factor. He's been about a bit too long, and you know, I just think, I don't know, maybe a bit too far for him now. But sorry, 1 second. Sorry, I'm going to both your fact here.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry.
How about you, Chris? I mean, how are you seeing this fight?
Similar to what Damien said, I'm expecting Waterhouse to win, probably by decision. You know, I can definitely see this one going the full distance, but I think Waterhouse would just be, you know, too busy and too much for women at this point. I think women's got a lot of miles on the clock. Waterhouse has got a lot of momentum behind him. He knows that there's some good paydays to potentially have at the British level if he can keep winning. So I'm expecting, you know, Woodhouse to put on a show and win.
That's
fine. A couple of other fights then on the card are Chris Hughes, the Badger. He's back in action against John Slowey. I like Chris Hughes. I'll be honest. He's he's not the most exciting fighter. 16-5 with only 2 stoppages. He's lost his last 2 fights, but this is a rematch. From December, Slowey is 16-0. It promises to be a decent enough fight, this one. I recommend you watch it. I don't know if you two have seen much of Chris Hughes.
Yeah, I've seen bits and bobs of him.
What do you make of him? I know he hasn't got knockout power and he's never going to have people on our forum talking about him, but...
No, he's just, he's just a kind of budget cup prize version of someone like Paul Williams was a couple of years ago, you know, very, very big and tall for the weight, and just relies on throwing a lot of shots and outworking his guy. He doesn't use his jab as much as he should, but that probably makes him a better fighter to watch than if he did everything by the book. So yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on that. I didn't see the first fight between him and Slowey. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, Slowey deserved the win.
Yeah, that seems to go in line with what I've heard. But I'll be trying to catch this one if I can.
I mean, it was a close fight, the first one. I mean, I was just having a look at the scorecard. Referee Kenny Pringle had it 95-96. But for me, Slowey did enough to take the win. interestingly, the only person to genuinely stop Chris Hughes is Carl Frampton. The other stoppage was a retirement defeat. Other fights, Scotty Cardle against Sylvain Chappelle, David Brophy against Harry Matthews, Michael Roberts against Michael Ramabellastay. And then Ryan Smith, Kristen Light, Hugh Gray, William Warburton, Callum Johnson, Nathan King, and Scott Allen, Brett Fideau. So it's nice to see a card without any TBAs on it, is nice.
He deserves a rest, actually.
Yeah. He does. Well, he is in action on Friday. He's in Norfolk, in Norwich, on a card. I just wanted to mention that card because Sam Sexton's on it. Now, there's been talk on our forum how Michael Sprott isn't a challenge for Anthony Joshua, whereas, 2 months ago people were saying that was the type of guy he should be in with. And somebody mentioned putting Joshua in with Sam Sexton. Do you see Sexton even taking Joshua to second gear, or would it just be another blowout?
Well, he couldn't take Price to second gear, really, could he? No. So, I would probably say no.
That was my argument when he got brought up, that, Price knocked him out in 4. I'd just expect Joshua to do it quicker.
Yeah, I mean, after this fight coming up, I'll ask both of you. Would you be happy if you were the only putting Joshua in for the British title?
Yeah.
Yeah. About you, Damien?
Yeah, no. Thank you. That's what they should be looking at by the end of the year. And even leaving all the talk, bringing up Spratt and Sexton and all these are all the guys that Anthony Joshua needs to win against anyway, because they're all sort of ranks, within the British titles.
Yeah.
So, for anyone to turn around and say, no, he shouldn't be fighting him, I seem to forget that, Anthony Joshua's ranked behind these guys. Mm. So he has to fight them. It's not a point of shooting, he has to, and that's it. There's no point just throwing him in against, the likes of, Kingpin or any of them guys who are sort of, he still needs to get experience. He still needs to get used to fighting in arenas. It's not just about sort of you know, developing himself as a fighter. There's still a lot more to it. And, you know, I think like Spratt and Sexton, even if the Duke blew it in a round, you know, I'd still like to see it.
Outside of, you know, the established higher order British heavyweights, so outside of, say, Hay, because he's coming back, which we knew he was going to do anyway, and Fury and Chisora, do you see any heavyweights out there in Britain that can give Joshua rounds, though?
No.
No. Well, I think even, you know, I think in hindsight, looking at Hugh Fury's last fight, you know, people before that were crying out for it, and then he had one bad night, and all of a sudden, you know, Hugh Fury, you know, shouldn't be allowed within 100 metres of him. But, you know, I still think that would be a bit competitive, you know, two young guys going out and, you know, both of them are still hungry, you know, both of them want the same thing. It's not like these older guys who have been around for, you know, a lot of years and just want to turn up for the paycheck. Hugh Fury's got his own ambitions, so I think he, you know, he'd probably put up a good fight.
It's interesting because one of the guys on the forum, I think it was Toppy, mentioned that if he loses, though, people will start saying he's a hype job and a nothing, and I completely agree with him. So, how old is he? 23, 24? But there's no need to rush him, you know, at the end of the day. I know everybody wants to see him fight for a world title because he's the big British hope, but he's still a kid. He doesn't need to be rushed. Let him take his time. He only had roughly 50 amateur fights. I'd rather see him do 6 or 7 long fights before he even gets in the ring for a world title.
I think it's credit, but, you know, people are even saying that, you know, even if he's fighting the likes of, you know, Spratt and Sexton, and people are rubbishing that fight, you know, that just shows you how highly they think, you know, how they rate him. You know, if they think that, you know, he shouldn't be around with these guys, he should be fighting for a world title within 10 fights, you know, I think, yeah, that's a lot of credit to him that people hold him in that regard. But then again, people had their own thoughts about David Price, you know, after he was knocking out Tom Dallas and stuff, and sure, the way I ended up.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was another guy somebody threw up to fight Anthony Joshua, was Tom Dallas. I can't see that fight being anywhere near competitive. It should be another Sam Sexton for me. Yeah. Dallas, you know, has been... I'm just going to get the British rankings up here on BoxRec.
Do you know what it is? It's not even the fact that, you know, the filming against these guys. The likes of Sexton and stuff, you know, you just have a feeling that even they know that they've hit their limit, you know, and there's not really much further they could go. You know, you need to put them in against even a fighter who maybe has the same record as him, but is just as hungry, you know, and even wants to put up a good fight. Like, sort of mentioning Hugh Fury there, you know, the likes of, and I know it's way too early for it, but you look at Chisora and Fury, you know, someone that Anthony Joshua, who they don't want Joshua, you know, stealing their dreams from them, you know, and I think you just need to find a fighter like that, because it just seems like the heavyweight division's full of people who just don't care, you know, they just turn up out of shape and, you know, that even they know in their own head, you know, that there's no chance they'll ever get a world title shot.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's a couple of names that I'll chuck out for you there. Are guys at similar points of their career who would turn up, you know, in shape and give it a go. Well, you know, they wouldn't turn up like they just trained at KFC, shall we say.
That's John McDermott, Alan.
Yeah, John McDermott's not getting a mention. So you got Hughie Fury, he's 14. I mentioned Gary Cornish, he's 18-0.
Yeah.
Carl Spencer's 4-0. David Allen, 6-0-1. Adam Mishi, Makaj, I think I pronounced that right, is 4-0. And then you got Conor Carmichael's 5-1. You know,
these.
He's in the heavyweight rankings.
Oh, is he? I know he's fighting the cruiserweight at the weekend.
Well, he's 35, that's the thing. I mean, he's quite old.
Yeah.
You know, these are guys who they should be targeting because.
Yeah. They Cornish might be an interesting fight, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Cornish hasn't really fought anybody to get the record he has, but there's not that many people in the heavyweight division, unfortunately. And I don't think Cornish should be promoted, you know, by one of the real big guys in the country, unfortunately. But even then, you've got somebody like let's have a look at the, you know, Ian Lewison is 9-2-1, hasn't been stopped. I think you've got to look at chucking him in with somebody who hasn't been stopped. Maybe maybe Danny Hughes. He's the guy that just took Fury the distance. You know,
yeah.
And they give a really good comparison. I mean, if Joshua did a number on him, I suppose.
Yeah. He certainly needs some rounds in the bank.
Yeah,
because I just think, see, with these journeymen, even like, it was Tom Dallaser just got me thinking, because even all the setbacks he has, you know, even he must be thinking now that, you know, that he's just going to become a journeyman. You know, in his head, he's resigned to that, you know, fact about himself. You know, he's never going to, you know, make it to a level above, even, you say domestic level, but he's thinking he's even a wee bit below that. So, you know, chuck him in there against Anthony Joshua, and in case he'll just turn up for a check. But, you know, the ones you just mentioned there, you know, they've all got unbeaten records, and if they were to beat Anthony Joshua, you know, they would put them. So, you know, I think the young guys would put it all on the line, you know, just come out fighting and, you know, put up a decent test against it. I think that's who he needs to fight.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd be surprised if we see Tom Dallas back in the ring.
Yeah,
he hasn't fought since September. He got stopped in two by Lewison for the Southern Area title.
Yeah,
I can't see him getting back. I can't see him getting back in the ring. And I always have the vision of Matt Skelton stopping him when he was lying pretty much flat on the top rope, and Skelton was hammer fisting him over the top. And that was he was broken after Price knocked him out in two.
Yeah, he probably looks back. I mean, he came in as a late replacement, didn't he, for Price?
Yeah.
He probably looks back on that and thinks that was
a mistake.
Poor choice at the time. You know, just not giving himself a chance to prepare. It might not have made any difference, but...
No, he's been stopped four times in his career. So, Thor Hammer was the other one as well.
Thor Hammer,
yeah. Yeah, that was prize fighter.
Maybe only a little guy as well for heavyweight, isn't he, Thor Hammer? So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's have a look at Saturday. There's... you know, big card in Omaha, Nebraska, over in the States. Terence Crawford against Yorkis Gamboa. Who are you backing?
It's a bit of a pick-em for me, like, but I would have to go with Crawford, you know, if I had to put a gun in my head. I just think with Gamboa, you know, there's just been signs there for a while that he's due a loss. You know, his last fight, he was put down. Was that his last fight? Because it's been that long.
He was put down, I think that was the fight before that. He got put down on the Pacquiao Marquez 4 on the card.
Yeah.
He fought once then against Perez, and it was a terrible fight.
Gamboa, I mean, I'm looking at BoxRec, so it might not be right, but it was 2000.
Perez was the last fight, I think.
The only time it showed he got put down was Orlando Salida.
No, he got put down.
There's nothing else on there.
He got put down in November, December 12 as well.
Showboating, I remember. He was in the 9th, and he got put down.
It was the one in the Perez fight was ruled to be a slip in the 11th.
Yeah, I'm not on about that. I'm on about the other fight before. He definitely got put down. But either way, I mean, the Perez fight, which was his last fight, I watched that as well, and it was just a terrible fight. He looked, he won a clear decision, but he looked slow by his usual standards. He looked very one-dimensional. The rounds were monotonous, followed the same pattern. He looked like he had no sort of X factor about him. You know, like, when he was ripping through guys like Ntagwa and so on, he looked just sensational when he laid his hands ago. There was none of that. He looked really flat. He looked uninterested. And, doesn't really look like a lightweight to me either. You know, looks a little bit soft at the weight. And I think he's, you know, Crawford might be catching him at the right time. So I'm going to go for Crawford to outfox him to a UD.
You the same, D?
I just think that the love of the sports just seems to have gone. You know, he hardly ever fights, and you know, when he does fight, as Chris said, he just looks disinterested. And that fight that we were talking about, I think it was that Michael Ferranes. And he was showboating in the 9th, thinking he could put over, and then he jumped up and he won on points. But I know it was definitely, I think it might have been that one. But you know, again, he's won about the 50 cent, and you know, I think it's the whole thing might have just got to him a bit. But as Chris said, I think Crawford will just get him at the right time. I think he's a bit too sharp for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go against the grain, and as normal, I'll go for a Gamboa points win. Just to be different. on the undercard of that one, then you've got there's nothing that really jumps out except for Matt Korobov, against Jose Uzcategui, who shall from now on be known as Jose. that's in the middleweight division. how do you guys see that go? That one going then? Does Jose stand a chance?
I've got to be honest, I'm pretty sure I've not seen Jose fight, I think.
Just to run through the facts and the facts and the figures, as they say, then. They're both unbeaten. Karabov 23-0, 14 knockouts. Jose 22-0, 18 knockouts. this will be the first time that Jose has fought out of Mexico. And he hasn't really fought anybody. His level of opposition, I'd say, is similar, to be fair.
Well, Korobov's certainly, certainly a very talented fighter. Like I say, a few years ago, he had quite a bit of momentum around him, and a lot of people thinking he was the next big thing at middleweight, but he's just sort of got stuck in the eight-round class since then. He hasn't progressed at all in terms of his opponents, and I think a lot of people have just lost interest in him. I know I certainly have, to a degree. So I'll be lazy and just kind of assume that he's going to have too much for Jose.
I just like we're calling him Jose. He's cool. how about you, Damien?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen much Jose either, so I think it's just, I've seen a bit of Karabov, but it's just it'll be... I'll probably not even see the fight anyway, but I would probably just take him anyway.
I'll go for Jose then.
Yeah. I knew he was going to go for Jose.
He's got a decent enough KO record, so you never know.
Yeah. And the other one in Oklahoma City, Remington Park, is Shannon Briggs. He's fighting Rafael Zumbano Love. See, I can say that guy's name. So Briggs, who's now 42 years of age, is fighting for the vacant.
I thought you were going to say 42 stone then, to be honest.
Have you seen him? He's ripped. He's in better shape than 99% of the heavyweights out there, which...
Judging by his latest dancing, so I'm beginning to think there could be something giving him a bit of an imbalance in his body, if you know what I mean, because he just seems to be the complete madman at the minute.
He's hired Big Larry's nutritionist, has he?
That explains Big Larry's latest physique change. I wonder if you're shaking, would he rattle? the guy who's fighting is 34-7-1, 27 knockouts, been stopped once. This is... Let me just have a quick scan. And I was going to say it's the first time he's fought out of Brazil, but it isn't. He has fought for a form of world title. And I'm quite disgusted. Jesus Christ. This will make you hate the belts and everything else that goes with it. He lost to a guy called Fabrice Orang for the vacant World Boxing Federation International Heavyweight title. And for the vacant Universal Boxing Organization World Heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Worse than that, he lost a unanimous decision over 12 rounds to a guy who at the time was 7-6 and is now 9-6. So, Jeff Christ.
I'm quite upset that I haven't got a world title. I'm waiting to go
in now. I'm sure.
I bet you two have got one.
And it's not even the world title, it's the universal title. I think the Martians will be, cracking up the day after a shout out.
Unbelievable.
Do you know what's really bad, though, is that, and it sums up the titles, Lucas Brown tweeted a picture of all of his belts, and you could see, the Commonwealth and the whatever, we know. And somebody sent him a message saying, can you name them all? He went, no. I haven't got a clue what
I saw an interview with Lucas Brown not long ago, and he openly admits, he doesn't care what belt is. He knows that the belts are kind of just irrelevant now.
Yeah.
He's happy to model himself as a world champion because he holds, is it the WBF belt he holds or the WBO?
Yeah, WBF that he won against James Toney.
He's happy to model himself as a world champion on that. He said we shouldn't get too caught up on who's got what belt, and when I hear farces like that, I'm starting to think he's right.
It's true. It's sad. Should we have a look who's held the Universal? There's only been three champions.
Wow, long-serving champions.
Yeah, the first one was back in 2007. Do you know what? I'm not even going to have a look at it because I just can't. It's depressing. I'll just quickly have a look then what belts Big Lucas has won, just while we're on the topic of him. So, he has won. Let's have a look. The vacant Universal Boxing Council Intercontinental Heavyweight title.
Fair enough.
The vacant World Boxing Foundation Asia Pacific heavyweight title. I'm trying to make sure I don't miss any of them out, because the really crap ones are in really small print. He won the vacant WBF heavyweight title against Tony. The vacant Commonwealth heavyweight title, and he won the WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council heavyweight title. So, you know, he's won belts that I've never heard of, and probably wouldn't even keep my trousers up. They're shocking. Jesus Christ. Hey, you just make you hate the sport at times, don't you? I mean, we all love boxing, but things like that, when, you know, there are belts like the Universal, it's quite depressing, really.
Kind of wonder, do the actual people that invent these belts actually know what the words mean? You know, they're just trying to throw together, you know, grandiose words to try and impress people.
Well, I'm wondering if Sepp Blatter has had anything to do with some of these belts, because it sounds like something he'd come up with.
Yeah. I mean, Sepp Blatter is to blame for a lot of things in the world. So. Yeah. I mean, if you look closely on, you know, the grassy knoll on the jet.
Yeah, well, that's the grass.
You clearly see Sepp Blatter poking
out. Just going to quickly, while we're... I'm just having a quick look at the Universal Boxing Organization's website. Just to have a look, see what their rankings are. They just have BoxRax rankings. I was thinking they've got Klitschko at number one. I'm sure he doesn't hold this belt. Right, let's just before we finish tonight, Spencer Clark has just tuned in. So good evening, Spencer. Hope you're well, my friend. the news came out today that Miguel Cotto and Sergio Martinez did just 350,000 pay-per-view buys, so it's flopped massively from what they wanted. Do you think that's more because of the fact people over in the States didn't believe Martinez was fit, or because Cotto just doesn't sell?
No, I think it's more because people were just expecting it to be you know, a pointless kind of lap of honour for the two of them. No one really... I mean, a couple of people have caught the upset, but no one thought it'd be a kind of rejuvenation of Cotto's career. I just think, you know, they between them, for good or bad, you know, they fooled everyone. Cotto in a good way, Martinez in a bad way. I don't think anyone was expecting a great fight, and it turned out to be, well, it wasn't a great fight, but it was a shocking result and a very good performance. So, you know, I'm sure if and when, you know, if Alvarez comes through the Lara test, I'm sure that Cotto Alvarez will do massive numbers. I'm sure it'll be a million plus buys. Still got plenty of marquee value, Cotto. And you know, he's given a reminder that he's still there and he's still relevant. So I'm sure he'll sell very well whoever he's up against next. And I suspect it'll be Alvarez.
Brilliant. Well, that is the end of the show. Thanks very much for downloading it and listening on Mixlr. It is appreciated. Just before we finish, then, I'll just make you aware of a couple of things. Check out the new site, v2boxing.com. Chris has done the latest in our fantasy fight series, and it's a fantastic look at Carl Froch versus Joe Calzaghe. And I'm going to ask you, because it's been a while since I put it on the site, and I read it when I put it up, who did you back to win?
Calzaghe. All day, every day for me.
Yeah.
Damien, quickly.
Hi, this is
Caldeggie.
Yeah.
Damien went to the Waterfront Brawl for us, and he's done a review on that one, so big thank you for that. I realise now that I need to edit that article, because I've made a bit of a cock-up.
Yeah, if anyone wants to watch it, if you just go to YouTube, the Food Fight's on there. Type in Waterfront Brawl.
Chris did the Lomachenko card for us, so thanks very much for doing that one, mate. I'm just quickly having a look. You also did an article about Matthew Muhammad.
So Matthew Muhammad, who passed away last month, yeah.
Yeah, which is obviously very sad to hear. And then there's obviously, you know, we're trying to get all the latest press releases on there for everybody. We're trying to grow the websites we can. You also did, I enjoyed putting the article up and I enjoyed reading it, mate. The James Toney's never-ending battle with weight and everyone around him article.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. Yeah. I enjoyed reading that one, I'll be honest with you. It was, you know, a really pleasure Pleasure to read that one. Spencer's just said, my bloody internet is playing up again, lads. Only getting a few seconds before it cuts out. I best pay my bill. Yeah, you best... Well, Spencer, you best stop mooching off your next-door neighbour, really.
he's going to be disappointed to miss out on them universal boxing rankings.
Or yeah, download the iTunes, because we've just invented belts.
Yeah.
Do you know what? By the end of the year, I expect...
How much does it cost to set up your own organisation and a belt?
Yeah, probably not that much.
I think we should do it.
Yeah, the
V2. Can I have Lucas Brown fighting for it?
Yeah.
I reckon we could, if we do it quickly, we could get Tyson Fury and Chisora to add it to their two they're fighting for. The V2 Boxing Federation. That sounds like a plan.
It sounds not bad, that,
yeah. So as I said, yeah, check out the website. There's also some really good questionnaires, question and answers on there. I recently got the opportunity to put my questions to Glenn Johnson. It was a pleasure to talk to him. We are hoping to rearrange the Jonathan Banks interview. There were some technical issues that I wasn't aware of. And as such, I'm struggling now to rearrange it. So let me just try and remember what else I need to tell everybody about before I say that's the end for definite. Download the magazine, it's available. We're currently in the process of doing the next one as well, and that is always available free. And if you want to advertise in it, if your company wants to do some advertising, then drop us an email, paulh@v2general.com, and I'll give you all the information. We're only asking for a small amount every month just to help with the costs. Do you guys have anything else that you would like to add before we finish the show?
No, I'm all good.
Yeah,
but you don't let Ampo get you down, mate, in case you're listening. You don't mean it.
I do.
All right, he does. Okay.
Told you, I'm having my staff things taken away from me tomorrow, so this is purely hatred. I'm only joking, Javi. So yeah, that's the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed the action at the weekend. Drop us an email or contact us on Twitter or Facebook with your thoughts. Make sure you keep an eye out for the write-up. I'm doing this week's write-up. Which one of you two is doing Saturdays?
I don't think we're that yet.
I don't know. I'm not too sure even if I'll be watching it on Saturday. So if I get watching it on Saturday, I'll definitely have a write-up for it.
I'm not watching Saturdays. So that's it, everybody. Good night. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
Evening.